This week, the U.S. Africa Leaders Summit is underway in Washington. The White House rolls out the red carpet with big promises for investment, diplomacy, even a multi-country presidential visit. But is it enough? As the United States seeks to build new ties with African nations and revitalize old ones. Also, we'll speak to the CEO of the U.S. African Development Foundation about his new plans for investing in grassroots youth and women-owned businesses in Africa. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome. I'm Heidi Adams. It's so great to be with you. $55 billion for Africa over the next 3 years. United States support for the African Union to join the G20 and a multi-country visit by President Joe Biden next year. The United States appears to be pulling out all the stops in a bid to reimagine its relationship with African countries. President Biden has brought heads of state and representatives from about 50 African countries and the African Union to Washington for the second U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. And this is a chance for African leaders to see whether America can be a reliable long-term partner. For them, it is about trust. The Americans, on the other hand, say they want a more modern partnership with the African continent as the U.S. looks to counter China and Russia's influence in the region. VOA's Zoe Liudaki takes a closer look at what is at stake.
Afrocentric and multilateral is how political analysts characterize the White House's strategy towards Africa. The U.S. strategy for sub-Saharan Africa, as it is called, emphasizes the role of the private sector in economic development, in health, infrastructure, finance, clean energy, climate change, and education. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken unveiled the new strategy at the University of Pretoria in South Africa back in August.
What we seek most of all is a true partnership between the United States and Africa. We don't want an imbalanced or transactional relationship.
Bob Wekesa is the deputy director at the African Center for the Study of the United States at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg.
The re-engagement with the African continent is quite robust compared to the Trump administration.
Proof of this robust engagement with the continent is the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit taking place this week in Washington. But what are the outcomes that Africans are looking to achieve?
Africans are likely to arrive there with a major economic agenda. Africa needs lots of infrastructure development. It's one of the least connected continents in the world, even just in terms of road, rail, and seaports. Not talking about other forms of communication, such as digital infrastructure, you know, information and communication technologies.
China has been very effective in spearheading major infrastructure projects in a number of African countries. And that raises the issue of whether the United States can compete effectively.
I think the U.S. can compete, and its failure to compete at this point in time has largely been lack of strategy.
This time, the United States intends to promote co-financing of the private sector in energy, health, and digital connectivity.
Even when the U.S. government gets involved in trade and economics relations with the African continent, it lets its private sector be in the driver's seat. So I think the U.S. government is likely to pursue an agenda in which there's a conducive environment for American businesses to thrive on the African continent.
Another issue that African leaders are interested in renegotiating is the African Growth and Opportunity Act, started by the Bush administration in 2001. But this time, African leaders want to be at the negotiating table.
The Africans are saying AGOA was passed by Congress unilaterally without really involvement of Africans on the discussion, the negotiation table. any new arrangement between Africa and the U.S. should factor in African interests, particularly those that are led by the African Union.
Analysts and Africa's leaders are welcoming this effort of re-engagement between the United States and the continent. Zoe Liudaki, VOA News, Washington.
And joining me now is VOA's Ignatius Arnor. He is at the summit for us. And Ignatius, good morning to you. Thank you so much for all the work you've been doing covering this summit like nobody's business. Ignatius, we are on day two now of the summit. We see a lot of promises, a lot of money, a lot of visits to Africa, lots of support for Africa to really have a bigger voice on the global stage. That's a lot of dreams come true in the course of 1 week. What are the Africans saying about this? When they hear these kinds of announcements are going to be made or are being made, is that cause for celebration for the Africans or cause for caution?
Haiti, thank you so much for having me on the show. Indeed, it's day two of the second U.S.-African summit right here in Washington, D.C. Several delegates have arrived across the African continent. It's a feeling of optimism, hope, but not only caution, but a position to ensure that there is a voice for the African continent. Folks who have come from the continent right here believe that right now, not only do they have a huge say in the global geopolitics, they have positioned themselves to ensure that they tap into, you know, the opportunities that U.S. officials have presented at this particular summit, Haiti. Let me talk to you about something exciting that happened yesterday. The Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, met with two key or powerhouses in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo and Zambia. You do know that the DRC is produces 70% of the world's cobalt, while Zambia is the world's sixth largest producer of copper and Africa's second largest producer of cobalt. Now, these are very rich mineral resources that would enhance the promotion of electric vehicles. And yesterday, a memorandum of understanding was signed between the United States and these two rich mineral resources on the African continent to develop what they call the electric vehicle value chain that will A, help promote job creation in these countries, and B, help global efforts to address the climate crisis as the clock is ticking on the climate front.
Well, Ignatius Arnor, thank you so much for your reporting. Good luck with the summit, and we'll have you back on the show for more of that. That is Ignatius Arnor. He is VOA's correspondent covering the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit for us here in Washington. And joining me here in studio now is Dennis Matanda. He's a trade and investment policy expert and chief executive at Morgenthau Sterling. Dennis, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about money, because I know you like to talk about money. If you look at the amount of foreign direct investment going from the United States into Africa, and then you look at this number of $55 billion over 3 years, which President Biden's expected to really make that promise this week. I know there's no magic bullet here, but how far would that kind of green go?
You know what's
in terms
interesting?
Of addressing that imbalance?
There's a real magic bullet to addressing that. $55 billion can find places. It can be absorbed into Africa very easily. But you need to have the right intermediary. If the United States over the next 3 years wants to invest $55 billion, they need to speak to the most important partners, who will be the development finance institutions. Africa has up to 10 investment-grade development finance institutions. These institutions are not $100 million. They are up to $25 billion in total assets. $8 billion in total assets. And so if you wanted to do particular amounts of work, there are places to take. Let me just give you a very simple example. Everybody keeps talking about the infrastructure gap being at $150, $160 billion. There are people who can manage these relationships. There's the Africa Trade Insurance Agency. that could actually underwrite transactions, provide you with political risk insurance, and they would remind people that the most secure, in fact, infrastructure investments in Africa are more secure than infrastructure investments in the United States. From that perspective, there is something else. $55 billion is almost 105% more, because if you look at the cumulative investments that have gone on ever since 2000 to 2020, 2021, it's less than $48 billion. What does that tell you? If you are going to do $55 billion in the next 3 years, you're going to have a major institutional change, which means you're going to have to create stakeholders that can play a major role. Because if you are promising $55 billion and you are still developing or dealing with the Africans in exactly the same way as you've been dealing before, that's going to be a challenge. Let me give you a simple example. The fact that we're still talking about copper and cobalt right now from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Zambia, and yet the fastest growth sectors in Africa are what you mentioned earlier, what something that Travis is going to be talking about. It's women, small and medium-sized enterprises in the service sector, as an example. So in my opinion, yes, you can talk about all these cobalt and things like that, but you need to go into the value chain. If you want to allow $55 billion to get infused into the continent in a period of 3 years, you're going to have to change the entire infrastructure, the way you engage. And lastly, I'll say it from this perspective, the United States federal government, the United States public institutions are very unique in the United States because they have been the entities that drive investment, because they can provide the sort of security that the private sector needs. They need to do much more. The Development Finance Corporation needs to deepen its relationships with the other DFIs on the continent. The Exim Bank needs to do much more. The U.S. Africa Development Fund, for example, needs to work with the U.S. Trade Development Agency to partner with Boeing, for example, to put cargo planes in Kinshasa, that sort of thing.
Dennis, is this a complete reset for everybody? Can the United States have this kind of modern partnership with absolutely every country on the planet? Because it, every country on the continent. Because it is worth noting not just who is here this week, but also who isn't. Countries like Zimbabwe. So how does the United States, when it looks as Africa as looks to Africa as a region, how would the dynamics work here in terms of dealing with different countries independently?
What's interesting is that the United States has and has always had relationships with all 55 member states of the African Union. The United States has embassy, and the embassy is everywhere. The United States is in the Central African Republic. The embassy is still, the structure still exists in Eritrea. The embassy in Zimbabwe still plays a major role in underwriting the relationship. But the question, I think, is what does a modern relationship look like? Let me tell you how seismic this relationship with Africa is. The fact that Africa could have a permanent seat in G20 is not at the African country level, but at the African Union level.
Right,
because regional
Africa.
Integration right. is probably the most important thing that Africa has going for it. The fact that Africa has the world's largest free trade area by member countries, 54 countries or 53, even if there were 52 countries under the AfCFTA, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, is huge. But now let's come at it from the other perspective. What more can the United States do? I'll just tell you from my perspective, the easy lifts or the easy things that could happen would be to renew AGOA for the next 38 years. Basically renew AGOA between 2025 and 2063, basically to align yourself with Agenda 2063, the African Union's Agenda 2063. The other part is to start considering products that are currently mandated by the tariff rate quotas, which is allow those products that are currently restricted to also, I mean, there are some countries that do some competitive things, competitive cash crops. Now, the challenge, of course, is going to be negotiating with the World Trade Organization on having more parameters, more allowances for the African Union or for the African countries. But there's something that you could do very easily. Allow all 55 member countries of the African Union to benefit from AGOA. Simple as that. Now,
Dennis, we've got just a minute and a half left. You know, the influence of Russia and China in Africa, countering China specifically, that is very clearly stated in the U.S. Strategy towards Africa. Yet when you speak to administration officials, they seem to want to do some breakdancing around the topic, not speak to China's influence directly. Why is that? And is that a good move?
Let me speak as an American, and let me speak like as a former government official. To be honest, and I'll say it from this perspective, if the United States private sector, if the United States was really interested in blowing China out of Africa, they would do it. But there is almost no real primary interest. There is no real tangible or viable opportunity. Yes, you can have the Carnegie Mellon Institution going to do a commodity exchange in Rwanda, but those things are really minuscule. You can say whatever it is that you want. If the American private sector had a real interest in Africa, they would do it in a heartbeat. Because we have to remember that the American private sector is very capitalistic. Secondly, we must not forget that the Africans do not speak Chinese. They don't speak Mandarin or Cantonese. They don't even speak Russian. I'm probably one of the few Africans that speaks Russian. I mean, it's very, very easy to say. So I'll say it, last perspective. The Africans watch more Hollywood movies than anything else. And if you look at the Afrobarometer, the Africans are more aligned with the United States. So I'll tell you this. Say what you will. The people in Kansas are not panicking about the Chinese in Africa. People in Austin, Texas are not panicking about China or Russia.
And the Africans are not panicking about China in Africa. Yeah. But Dennis Mutanda, thank you so much. Dennis is a trade and investment policy expert and chief executive at Morgenthau Sterling. Thank you so much, Dennis. Welcome. Well, stay with us. I've got a special guest for us after the break. Travis Atkins is with us, and we can see he's here waiting to speak to me a little later on. And if you are a youth or woman-owned enterprise in Africa, you're going to want to hear what he has to say. Stay with us here on Straight Talk Africa. We'll be right back.
My message to the U.S. government and President Biden is that since the United States are a major player in the historical fight for human rights in general and women's rights in particular, the U.S. must invest in strengthening relations with African countries in the sense that ensuring these rights are fulfilled. And this would mean specifically encouraging African leaders to invest in the elimination of gender inequalities and also promoting women's participation and representation in the political, economic, and social lives of their nations.
My message to the United States and U.S. President Joe Biden is, Africa has a majority of a youthful population, but unfortunately, conflict, climate change crisis, and corrupt authoritarian governments have been holding its people back. I will suggest for the U.S. government to focus on strengthening, building democracies and rule of law in Africa, including media freedom.
The message that I have to the United States and President Joe Biden is that they should just keep transparency with their communications and their relations with Africa and South Africa as a whole. Even for young people, there's not much opportunities. Getting to the U.S. is quite difficult just in terms of jobs and opportunities in general. So maybe just make the path easier to opening those doors for us as young people.
Welcome back. The U.S. African Development Foundation works with women and youth-owned enterprises to create pathways to prosperity for African communities. And Travis Atkins is the CEO of the USADF, and his team work on just that, helping Africans really create that path to prosperity we spoke about earlier. And Travis is here in studio with me. Travis, hello there, and
good
welcome
morning.
Back.
Thank
now,
you for
of course,
me.
We've seen each other a few times over the course of this U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, and I'll get your assessment on the summit itself in a short while. But you've told me that you've got some news that you want to share with our viewers and our listeners here on the show about what you've been doing lately. So we're all ears.
Sure. As you know, Haiti, our focus, as you just mentioned, is women, is youth, is entrepreneurs and small and medium enterprises across the continent. And that is under the belief that SMEs are central to the economic recovery of the continent in the post-pandemic era, but also the broader economic growth of the continent. Not to mention, they are the majority populations. They are those who have been forgotten and marginalized. And much of the future of the continent, we believe, rests in their ability to reach their aspirations and their successes. And this is why we make our investments in those places. And so we do have, as I announced yesterday, three new off-grid energy challenges totaling about $5 million, where we will be investing in off-grid energy solutions in rural and para-urban areas for health facilities, for entrepreneurs of SMEs, as well as for women leaders across the energy sector. In addition to that, we signed now and launched a five-year, $20 million initiative in partnership with the Tony Elimelu Foundation. And that will include investment toolkits for entrepreneurs, looking at helping them to increase their revenues, looking at helping them to do job creation. And we will be doing that program in about 16 African nations. Wow. And fortunately, we have so much to announce this week that I don't want to take up all your time with all of the other things right. that we have going on. But those are a few highlights just to get us started this morning.
But it's great, Travis. You know, I always believe that we can tell people all we like about, you know, you have access to this. But unless we actually give them the information, tell them, you know, I'm from South Africa, and I think it's really important to always tell people what their rights are in this new democratic dispensation. Same thing with whatever is on offer and whatever is available for people to help their businesses, help their enterprises. Can you tell us exactly how some of these partnerships that you're talking about, how they help? Can you give us a profile of someone who would benefit from the work that you do?
Sure. Across the continent, and I should also make this announcement while we're here, our agency will be launching in the next couple of weeks our intake portal. Because everywhere I go, people are saying, how can we access information about grants from USADF? How can anyone
apply? That was one of my questions too.
At any time. And so we will be launching this intake portal, which will allow any entrepreneur anywhere on the continent to apply for grant funding from USADF 365 days per year. In terms of the profile, again, this is small and medium enterprises across the continent. These are those looking for grants anywhere from $5,000 up to $250,000 per entity or per entrepreneur. These are folks working in agriculture, farmer associations, agribusinesses. These are folks looking to do energy investments to expand the access to electricity across the continent, particularly in the rural and para-urban areas. And then these are entrepreneurs who are building businesses that benefit themselves, but also have a job creation element to them to expand employment and the improvement of livelihoods across the continent.
Now, Travis, you travel to the continent and across the continent frequently, and you speak to many entrepreneurs, right? What do they tell you about, what do they find are the greatest stumbling blocks to doing business on the continent?
I think certainly access to finance, right, and access to the technical skills that will help them to improve their financial management, to help them to be able to digitize their information about their profits and yields year over year, all of the elements that they need to be able to go into a bank and access commercial lending. And so our aim is to help them to move beyond grant funding with an initial grant so that they can become increasingly credit worthy and increasingly able to gain access to finance on the open market.
And I will say during this week at the events we've been at, I've heard a lot of people thank you for the support. So clearly you are absolutely out there doing that. But Travis, what in your work have you also found are the biggest threats to women's economic empowerment, to youth economic empowerment on the continent right now?
I think the sense that they are a small niche, a special interest group, rather than the truth of the narrative, which is that they are the majority. And they are not only the future, but they are the present. And I think if you lock out 60% of your population that are youth, if you lock out over 50% of your population whom are women, there is no way for you to advance your economy. There is no way for you to advance your nation. And so there is a narrative piece of this. There is a governance piece of this. There are cultural elements of this. And so what we're trying to do at USADF is to tell the story and to help tell the story of the brilliance and the ingenuity of women and youth entrepreneurs, and then to demonstrate that with the smallest inputs by us, they can do a brilliant and ingenious things with their own initiative, their own creativity, their own ideas.
Travis, I've been on your website, and there really is a section where people can go if they want to apply for grant support. Tell us again what is on offer, if I could put it that way, and what should people know about being ready and being eligible before they click on that link?
Sure. Well, one good thing is when you go into our intake portal, you will see several elements that will direct you through a process to understand if you're eligible, to understand the elements that you might not have, that you might need to be ready in 3 months or 6 months or a year. Also to understand that not only can you apply for grants on a rolling basis, but that we also put out requests for applications on a routine quarterly basis. Sometimes they are specific to women. Sometimes they are specific to youth. Sometimes they are specific to a country. Sometimes they are specific to a topic, whether it be farming or electrification or vocational training. And so I would just ask that you stay tuned and that you know that there is a U.S. government agency that is committed to extending U.S. foreign assistance to the forgotten among the marginalized. And that is where we focus, and that's the story that we want to tell.
Travis, just briefly, we're coming up on one and a half minutes. Tell us what's your impression of the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit so far. And when we talk about all this optimism that there is, are we overplaying that? Or is there real optimism about the promise of all these partnerships and America's new way of engaging Africa?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question that the optimism is real. I don't think there's any question that there is a new tone and tenor from the Biden administration on engagement with Africa. There is a clear focus on the African diaspora and engagement in that piece to recognize all of the ways that the U.S. And African nations are already connected and how we can build on those connections in linked fate to go forward together in ways that are mutually beneficial for us all.
Well, Travis Atkins, good luck with the summit. And if you want to learn more about the U.S. African Development Foundation's work, you can visit their website, usadf.gov, and you'll find some good information there. And if you don't, tell us on social media, and we'll bring Travis Atkins right back here to please explain. Travis, always a pleasure
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that is our show for this week. Thank you to all my guests and all our contributors. A huge thanks to all our affiliate stations airing Straight Talk Africa throughout the continent. And I'm always grateful to you for joining us on television, radio, and for streaming with us online. From our team here in Washington, until the next time, go well. Goodbye.